radio stories are, by their nature, temporary things. We report, write, edit, and then produce them. And once they air, they seem to vanish without a trace. They don't call, they don't write, they don't remember our birthday. And yet, every so often, a story will find its way back. We'll hear from someone who heard it, or a friend will call to talk about it. And somehow it happens. That three-minute piece we aired at the end of the B segment has taken on a life of its own. These are stories that have checked back in with different people for different reasons. We'll hear from listeners about their favorites, a story about an in-flight wardrobe malfunction, a beaver stuck in a traffic jam, a stray cat in a prison yard, a young girl leaving foster care. We'll also hear from NPR staff, Michelle Norris, Scott Simon, Neil Conan, Robert Siegel, Melissa Block, Ari Shapiro, and myself, all with a tale to tell about a story we love. Anne, a listener in Washington, D.C., wrote of her experience listening to Weekend Edition one Saturday morning. "I heard a commentary by Scott Simon that was amazing," she writes. "I was crying in the shower. He had a beautiful story about his daughter, Elise, and her love of ballet. I love his stories about his family, and I think this was his best ever." Here is Scott Simon's story, A Daughter's Dance.
Our five-year-old daughter is a ballet jock. Elise keeps her pink leotard and ballet slippers on after class when she has an ice cream cone, two scoops, extra sprinkles when she's with me, some diet for a ballerina, and often wears her dance clothes to bed. In the morning, she'll strap on her ballet slippers, say, "Watch me, watch, watch," and do arabesques in the kitchen. Ballet is a sport to Elise. I think she likes the jumping, moving, sweating, and competing as much as the pink and bows. Elise appeared in her first ballet performance a few days ago. It wasn't some humble school production with children just twirling around as snowflakes, but an original ballet called Preparation for the Ball, with music by Prokofiev, choreographed by her ballet teacher, Miss Kramer, who sent several students on to professional companies. Elise played a mouse. In the weeks leading to her show, she did rendezvous and pas jetés in the halls of our apartment, which left me dazzled, proud, and a little wistful. Clearly, she's fallen in love. She occasionally lets me tie her slippers or leans on my shoulder to step into her tights. It's only because she senses how much I want to feel useful. I have a father's adoring, uncritical love for Elise. If she belches, I think she sounds like Beverly Sills. But Miss Kramer, who loves her too, teaches truths a father finds hard to utter. Like, "No, that's not good enough. Do it again." It reminds me that children not only need good parents, but teachers, coaches, and friends. The night after Elise's show, I took her to watch the Joffrey of Chicago dance the Nutcracker. Their performance was joyous. Elise is still too light to keep a theater seat down, so she stood entranced for most of the night, occasionally turning to ask me, "How do they do that?" The next morning, our whole family went out for breakfast, and who should be sitting across from us but two of the dancers from the Joffrey, Allison Walsh and John Gluckman. They were kind to Elise, who was shy at first, but wound up doing arabesques around the table as if to say, "We're teammates, aren't we?" So all this week I've been thinking about the reception after Elise's first show. At one point, we couldn't find her. She and a couple of her friends had taken their brownies and snuck back onto the empty stage, where they leapt, pas jetés, and exulted in the beaming, bright light. She saw me and shouted, "I'm going to jump," and took a sudden running leap off the stage into my arms, a real tour de force. It was one of those moments that can happen in this season when a parent is joyful that life has put them exactly in that spot.